Hey, fellow traveler. Welcome to the Third Eye Awakening podcast, a show where we talk all about spiritual and psychic awakening, magic, the shift from 3D to 5D, starseeds, ascension, multiple timelines, multiple dimensions, the universe, the multiverse, the Akashic records, all the good things. I am your host, Amy Blair, and I'm so glad to have you here with me today. Okay, let's do this. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Third Eye Awakening. I have with me today Brandon of the Expanding Realities podcast. We just had an awesome conversation like days ago. Mm-hmm. I guess it was a week ago, wasn't it? Wow.
Yes, ma'am.
Time goes so fast. That's wild. Anyway, we just had an amazing conversation a week ago where I got to be on his podcast. And now I'm excited to hear more about Brandon's experience and his perspective and his interesting meandering mind for this podcast. So check out Expanding Realities if you haven't already. There are a lot of great conversations happening over there. But without any further ado, I'm really excited to jump into this conversation. Thank you so much for being here, Brandon. Welcome.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you so much.
Yay. Okay, so I would love to hear, I mean, like, first of all, you're so interesting. We just met, I guess, in February, the beginning of February.
Yep.
And we had a little conversation to sort of like prepare for our podcast swap cast situation. And I was just like, oh, this guy's going to be so much fun to talk to. I can tell it's a gift of yours to conversate clearly. But what brought you to this place where you wanted to start a podcast of your own about super interesting topics and talking to super interesting people?
Well, I thank you for that, because the super part of that claim is you are super interesting people. So that worked out. So I was very excited to speak with you as well. And the way that we met was really cool. I love that kind of thing. And I actually follow synchronicities. That's how I kind of book all my guests, and I'll get more into that a little bit later. But basically where I came from with the podcast thing is I started one a year and a half ago called the Up and Atom Experiment. And it was with a guy that I worked with. We had great banter. We were back and forth. He's very, very Orthodox Christian. I'm very spiritual and not that at all. So like I said, had awesome conversations. And so it was one of those things where I was like, oh, we could just start a podcast. This would be great. And then I had my wife join me and we did it in the house. I just learned as much as I could about podcasting. And I didn't even actually know what a podcast was until 2 years ago. I'm way behind on this thing. My wife was listening to the last podcast on the left when we went to the store one time. And I was like, what is this? She said, it's a podcast. I was like, what the fuck is a podcast? And I kind of got into it from there. And that's fascinating stuff too. It's true crime, and that's fine. But not really something I'm into, but the concept I was very, very interested in. So then I had another friend of mine who was a strict atheist. And so I thought, well, this will be a fun gaggle of folks. You know, you've got an Orthodox Christian. You've got my wife and I who are very spiritual, very possibilian, very open to ideas. And then you've got a very atheist personality. And on there, we covered a lot of stuff. It was a fun show. It was more like a morning radio show, you know, and I have a whole soundboard and I put like queefs and stuff on it. I thought that would be funny. And so we did that and it was fun. But that, I think, turned into the show that I've got now. So about 6 months into that show, I started really networking and reaching out to authors, to academics, to filmmakers. And that's where I wanted the show to go. And then it turned out that whenever we kind of took a break because of this whole corona thing and had to start doing some remote. And we started to get a lot of friction as far as that goes. A lot of the topics I cover are spirituality, UFOs, all sorts of cool things like that. And it ended up not being something that everybody else just got disinterested in it. And so the more I was ramping up to do this next version of the show, which is the show Expanding Reality that I do now, it ended up being that nobody else wanted to do it, which was fine. That's okay. We just kind of move on. But from there, I was able, like I said, to start utilizing contacts and building this network of people that I was just interested in talking to. What I found is that nobody's unreachable. So you can actually contact people and just talk to them, and they'll want to have a conversation with you. Now, I think that there's some synchronicities in that, which I'll still get to. But what I found is that when I started doing this, I was really apprehensive about doing one on my own because I leaned on a team before and it was fun. But like you said, I'm quite verbose, so I didn't think it'd be an issue. So also, I was really conversation oriented. My job my day job allows me to do that. I've always felt like I was a really good communicator, and I was able to just get the most out of people, you know, kind of change their vibe and bring some interesting topics to light with some folks. And then the synchronicity part of it. So the synchronistic part of it is to how we met. So I hadn't listened to Tenfold in a while, you know, and it kind of pops up and then I'll binge it, you know, for a long time or whatever. And the same with a few other shows. I happened to open the app that happened to pop up the episode you were on. And I don't believe in coincidences. It's all synchronicity. So as I was listening to your story and that show, it blew me away. And then especially, and I know I've heard another guest tell you this too, that whenever you said that males don't come on your podcast, I was like, I want to do it. And so I reached out and contacted you. And you were very sweet. You immediately hit me back. And then, like you said, we had a great conversation, which that only increased the vibe. And then we started scheduling our shows together. Now, I've found quite a few folks, not only deliberate people that I've wanted to reach out to and get on the show, have been very responsive, but another way that it's worked out is synchronicities. And like I said, I will pop up on Instagram or something like that. And I don't spend a ton of time on that stuff. And so whenever something pops up or it's sponsored or something, I'll click on it just because it's interesting, like an interesting post. I'll kind of look at them a little bit and I'll go, this person seems amazing. And then I'll just message them. Hey, do you want to come on the show? And people have been incredibly responsive. That's how I got Travis Morris on the show. Sweetheart of a guy. He did my first episode for the launch of the new podcast. And the way I described the show is versus the old one was, I call the old one the cocoon and this one's the butterfly. So the old one was just the one where I was preparing and learning about hosting and audio and all of that stuff. And then that led me to the show that I do now, which is just a launching of all these ideas. And it's happened so fast. It's gotten really big, really quickly, which has been awesome, but I was ready for that. You know, that's what I wanted.
Yeah. And you've had some amazing guests on, like, you know, people that you wouldn't think that this had sort of taken off 6 months ago, just based on some of the guests that you've had on, but I think you're right. Like, well, first of all, when we follow synchronicities, it's sort of like, it's almost like the universe is hand delivering things to us, right? And we're just, okay, I'll take this. Yep. But also I agree that a lot of people are flattered or, you know, really interested in having a conversation where they get to share their perspective, especially in these realms of, like, you know, strangeness and alternative thinking and spirituality and stuff, because there's not a lot of welcoming place for us in the rest of the world. So we're excited to be given a chance to talk about how we perceive things.
Yeah. And it is like a diamond in the rough kind of thing. I think that we find each other, you know, like a soul tribe or like people that you're meant to talk to. Cause so it is interesting to where we do kind of find each other like that. And we gravitate towards each other. I think we're all individualistic expressions of the whole, you know, that's one of the more comforting ideas that I like to subscribe to. Right. I don't have beliefs. I have ideas. Ideas are easier to change. Beliefs are very rigid. And then you ignore information. And that's, in my mind, not a very productive way for me to conduct my experience here on this plane. So the way that I like it is yes, there are a ton of us out here and we're scattered. But the interesting part about it is the more conversations like what you and I had on my show, which again, entirely grateful for. It was one of my favorite. You're one of my favorite guests I've ever had on. You're not supposed to have favorites, but you definitely are top two. I'll put it that way, not to hurt anybody's feelings, but it's a cool way in which this works because these kind of conversations bring people together. And I'll have people, because I've got a wide variety of topics that I cover on my show. It's called Expanding Reality. It's not called Let's Pigeonhole Myself into True Crime or something like that. But it's a wide variety of stuff because I'm interested in a wide variety of people and a wide variety of ideas. So I like that we can find each other and come to a balance on this. And a couple of people have been putting books out. And so it was just, again, that divine timing to where they were more willing to accept things like that. Or I reached out to somebody and they said, you know, not now, I'm working on a book, but I'll get back to you. And then again, it's seemingly out of the blue. If you're just looking at this from a random perspective, which I don't believe it is, then seemingly out of the blue, they just messaged one day. I happen to have like that next Thursday free for a show. They came on immediately and it was divine timing. Somebody I've been really wanting to talk to for a long time. It was Dr. Michael P. Masters. His episode isn't out yet, but I just recorded him on Thursday and he's got one of my favorite perspectives on the UFO phenomenon. I mean, he's a biological anthropologist. He's a doctor and a professor at a university in Montana. And his idea from an anthropological state of being is that they're future humans and time machines coming back. And I think I talked to you about this, but it was just such an honor being able to talk to him. I was just blown away that this dude just wants to sit down and have a conversation with me. And then we end up nerding off about like time travel paradoxes in movies and all of that stuff. It's just, it's amazing. And like you said, people were wanting to do it. It's great.
I'm so excited to hear that episode.
It's so cool. Cause we talked about it a lot. And one thing that I brought up on that one is that I made the comparison of a Venn diagram, and it seems like UFO community is way over here and then science is over here. And there's not a lot of common ground in which they meet, but he's in that spot. He goes, no, I'm very scientific, but also I'm willing to entertain ideas and not be rigid about that. But then you also, on the other side of it, have a lot of UFO people in that community that sit there and say, no, it can't be anything other than aliens are coming from Zeta Reticuli. And then they plant their flag there. And then you've got the hollow earth people, and they're, nope, it's only hollow earth. There's nothing outside, which is limiting as far as the perspective goes. But I think that having people like Dr. Michael P. Masters on, I know Diane Pasolka, she wrote American Cosmic. She has kind of the same view of it as well. These academics that are willing to entertain these ideas. And that I find fascinating. I think that's the next step for the movement to be able to progress forward.
Yeah. And there's so, I mean, from people like you and I, and I'm sure many of both of our listener pools, they're so appreciated to be an academic, to exist within that system, and to still maintain that open-mindedness and that yep. like essential curiosity that sort of like characterizes the true nature of science and research, I think is absolutely amazing. It's a tremendous gift to all of us to have the chops to be able to, you know, like really sift through mountains and mountains of data and information and prior research and all that, and to contribute to it in an open way that stays open to new possibilities is just, yeah, to me it feels like a huge gift. It's not my gift to share, and so I'm so deeply appreciative of them that they're willing to share in that way, because I feel like it advances the movement of interesting thought.
Absolutely. And, yeah. And the interesting thing you pointed out in his book, you are a vital part of this. I've got to give you that, because you've got the ideas from the other perspective. So you're more philosophical like me. You've got more of an inner touch with ideas rather than a rigid belief system that you have to adhere to. And this is something that Michael and I talked about, or Dr. Michael P. Masters, I called him Michael P. Moneymaker. So he actually was talking about in his book, and we talked about this on the show, that we need a cooperation between the disciplines, right? Because you've got a university where all these things are taught, but you've got, you know, you'll go to a class in physics and you're taught that this is the way things are and there's no other way about it. Ignore all that other bullshit. And then you'll go to your philosophy department and they just blow your mind with all these crazy concepts and ideas, but the marrying between the two. So that's when it takes folks like me and you talking to academics who have the science background but are willing to entertain ideas, and us knowing that there may be scientific answers from the things that we're interested in looking into. I think that cooperation between the disciplines, you know, we get physics and philosophy together and talk about it.
Yeah.
Because we don't know everything.
Yeah.
And that's the worst sentence ever spoken by human beings is, well, that's just the way we've always done it. And I think that if scientists take a rigid approach where they're building theories based on theories that can then prove further theories based on theories, then that's a real problem for humanity as a whole to move forward, because we're going to need the cooperation. We're going to need the expanding of our realities to be able to put all of that to perspective and to marry the two in a way that they can push humanity forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree that it's like we complement each other. Like I mean, it's just so natural. The right brain and the left brain work together. And, you know, when they are in together in coherence, like so much expansion is available.
Absolutely.
So, okay. So I'm interested to know what got you into this kind of stuff? Were you one of those kids who was just born super inquisitive and like kind of just with a feeling that there was more than the explanations that you were receiving, or did it develop at some point along your life journey? Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah. So definitely very inquisitive early on. It was one of those things, raised in Baptist church. Mom and dad are still very, very religious and rigid to that ideology, which is fine. I think whatever anybody believes is not, as long as it's not hurting anybody else, it's fine. But it ended up being to where, yeah, I got very inquisitive. And it started with questioning the belief system, because there were a few red flags, even early on. I was just like, hang on. So God loves us and he created this horrible place, but he can also see past, present, and future, but he sends us to that horrible place and then allows us to be born to then go to this place. And these are not things that like a 13-year-old should be thinking about, you know? And so then it kind of, I just kind of put a pin in that because it was, okay, this is just the way and that's fine. And then I'm not going to say lost religion. I kind of moved away from that idea into a more naturalistic state, to be honest with you, whenever I was in my senior year in high school. And then right after I graduated, I started experimenting with different substances, right? I moved out of the house with the parents there and spent about 6 years out on my own on a journey. And I started experimenting with psychedelics. I definitely smoked weed. I was a touring musician for 12 years. So I did that. Then it ended up being to where the more open my mind became, the more ideas for my mind to be open about followed. And it actually all started with one book, Neil Donald Walsh's Conversations with God, the first book. That actually sent me on a path to where, instead of here's what religion is and here's what God is and these people have it all figured out, it kind of opened my mind to the possibilities element of it, to where maybe it's more and maybe we're more connected to source. And maybe we're just individualistic expressions of God, rather than God is this thing way over there that you can't get to unless you go to a church or unless you go to a synagogue. And that there's horrible things that will happen to you if you don't believe in the people that tell you that this is the way you should believe. And then you find out that that dude was cheating on his wife the whole time, or that that dude diddled kids. And it's like, hang on. So that's the representative that I've got to follow. And then these deep intuitions that led me into these synchronicities, which then just expanded my reality completely. And so I then got into because I did the spiritual awakening before I did the conspiracy stuff. And then when you find out that there may be some questions to be asked as far as religion goes, then you start finding out that there's questions to be asked with everything. And then you get to this lost place, I think, but I put it as a state of vulnerable awareness. You know, you're very vulnerable, but you're aware that other things and concepts exist outside of this. And so that's naturally where this stuff goes. And so then you find books. Books would just find me. Again, the Four Agreements, another huge one. And I found that I would get to points in my research or understandings to where I would kind of plateau and I would just sit on that idea for a while. And then something new would enter the life and it's like, boom, back on the ascent. And we would just kind of take all that information and then just move forward with it into new ideas that then expand on other ideas. And then you have all of this frame of reference for context, which then you can formulate an idea about your world. And I'll let you know when I figure it out. I'm still on the path. I'm definitely considered a seeker, you know?
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, there's so much there. There's so much to explore. I want to just acknowledge momentarily before asking another question, the importance of what you just described in terms of, like, you know, you'd read a book or you'd receive a concept, like an understanding, and then it would feel like it plateaued for a while. Mm-hmm. But then something else would come in and, you know, you'd be like on the expansion and the rise again. And I just really appreciate you saying that, because I get a lot of questions from people about like feeling really discouraged because they feel like they are backpedaling. Or they plateaued, like they, like at one point they were, you know, having all of these realizations and now they're not, and they feel frustration. And my take on it, based on my own experience and based on, you know, the more and more Akashic readings I do, the more of an expanded picture of things I get through the eyes, so to speak, of other people's records, is that it's partly because we are human and we're living human lives and we have a human nervous system. And so, you know, we're not like, sometimes the path of awakening can feel like a desire to escape this, you know, this hell plane that we perceive it as sometimes, and to just return to that all knowingness and that all encompassing love and all that kind of stuff. And of course we want to return to that, but I think also we really want to be human. And sometimes our soul just like takes a back seat for a while so that we can like ride this human wave and have our human experiences and then integrate the more recent realizations in the background. And then when it's kind of settled and fully integrated into our nervous system and our worldview is when something else will appear on our path that kind of like triggers that rise again. Is that what it has felt like for you?
It does. And what I've come to kind of the new idea that I'm playing with right now is manifestation. So then what I like to do is put into context new ideas that I come across and then kind of not relive my past, but just kind of view it from this objective position to where I can look into past experiences I've had and apply the new ideas and concepts to maybe something that I've gone through, to specifically the plateau part of it, because that is something that I've thought about. I've been like, well, how come I get to this point and then it just kind of settles and then it moves on to another point? I think there's an element of manifestation that I've been playing with a lot lately that maybe, perhaps, it's just, and there's that old saying, I'll start with this and then we'll go from there. But there's that old saying that you're not moving backwards. And this is something you can tell people that you talk to about feeling like you're backpedaling. It's the opportunity, the universe, or you, because you are the universe, is giving you the opportunity to really set your focus because it's about to launch you like an arrow. And so the term that I've heard, and I'm sure this is pretty ubiquitous, but it instead of moving backwards or standing still, you're an arrow being drawn back in a bow. Now, the most important part about that moment is that you hold your focus and you hold your aim and that you really decide where you want that arrow to go because it's about to be launched. And so instead of looking at it as a stagnant or not moving forward or even moving backwards, you are moving backwards. You're building angular momentum and you're building up energy in that bow because you are that arrow that's about to be launched into whatever direction you want to go into. So holding your focus downrange is one of the most important things in that moment that I've found, because that's part of your manifestation. That's the part of it of manifestation that applies to this, right? So it feels like sometimes that we do get in this stuck place or we do get in this stagnant place. Take a deep breath, just look around, go back to basics. This is your opportunity to really realign, to refocus, to get rid of the toxic things in your life that aren't serving you anymore, and then to come across some new ideas. And if you ever want some new ideas, go listen to your show, The Third Eye Awakening. It's phenomenal. You have some great new concepts that you guys talk about all the time. Come on over to Expanding Reality. We always talk to cool people. And if you ever want to email me, you know, any of your listeners, I'll extend this olive branch. If you guys ever want to email Amy or I, we've got a list of books that will kind of put you forward or keep you moving or give you something to tide you over to remind yourself to realign your focus as you're being launched out into your new, greater, grander version of who you are. Mm-hmm. Now, to the point about the experience that we have in our soul resetting, I completely agree with that. Because never forget, folks, you are a skeleton, a spirit riding a skeleton in a meat suit that's here just to touch, taste, smell, see, and hear everything you can before the experience that you've chosen to have is over. And that's something that when you put it into perspective like that, it really brings back the whimsy of the universe. And I think that that's something that we all need every now and then.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that comparison or the way that you've tied it into manifestation. And recently, that's been probably one of my biggest activations in manifestation as well, is that power of holding the focus. I got really disciplined about it as of, I guess, the end of December, insofar as like, you know, I live my regular life and whatever, but at least twice a day, I focus in on my manifestation and I let it lead me. So rather than me trying to like pigeonhole it into the original idea I had, I let it refine itself and tell me what it's turning into. And wow, the results have been mind blowing. It's very exciting. My manifestation is a real thing, everyone. And I'm pretty sure that like right now I'm like, okay, I'm going to have like a whole other conversation with Brandon just about manifestation, because I love talking about this topic with people so, so, so much.
Yes. Same. And anytime I would love to.
Yay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So something else I'm curious about is like what, okay, I'd love to hear more about your take on conspiracies, whatever conspiracies you feel like talking about. And then also I'd love to hear about your perspective on interdimensional beings, cosmic beings of cosmic intelligence. I don't know. I feel like the word alien is such a weird loaded word now, but you know, that's kind of what I'm getting at. And that might be like two questions answered in the same way. I'm not sure. I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah. How much time you got? So I would say that two conspiracies, an interesting thing that I got, and this was one of those times where it's like one of those moments I can remember it vividly. I was 18 years old. I was living in Houston, Texas at the time. My folks had moved down there. I finished the last 2 years of my high school down there. I was working as a waiter in a Chili's. I remember the table number. It was table 13. There was a gentleman sitting there with the newspaper. And I had not really questioned the government or anything at this point. Now, I was waiting on the guy. He was the only person in my section. He was it. And so he's having coffee. It's in the morning. He, you know, right when we opened, and he had a newspaper, and I happened to come up to him and just, you know, check on him, see how he was doing. And he said, "Can you believe this?" And I said, "What was that?" And he opened the newspaper. He read something to me. It didn't register as anything was wrong because it was official print in newspaper. I didn't think anything of it. And he goes, "You know, because this and this," and he had this whole breakdown and opinion on the little paragraph that he read me. He goes, "Man, in this life, you can't trust any of this. And you've really got to read between the lines." And that stuck with me. And that was one thing. I don't remember the gentleman's name, but it stuck with me. And so now official stories come out. I don't question all of them, but I definitely take them with a grain of salt, especially lately. We've been getting a ton of misinformation. And then the information that comes out that's contradictory to that, they label as misinformation and then not allow you to even pursue the thought experiment of it or to do your own research. The perception management game is on point with these people. And whoever these people are, it's the lizard people, maybe interdimensional, who knows, and it doesn't matter. The problem is that our consciousness is being steered in a direction away from truth and even away from objective truth, because you have to have that as well. There's subjective truth, things are very, very real, and objective truth, things that are true for you. Other way around. Objective truth are real things. Subjective truth are the things that are true for you. Okay. So whenever you start looking into concepts like that, you look at the heavy ones. Now, I put conspiracies in different levels, right? So there's fun ones like the Mandela effect and Project Bluebeam. And I love that one. I could talk about that one all day because it's so cool and crazy. And they just thought of it all. And it's a lot of fun. But then you have heavier ones, like certain shootings that I can't say on your show, or they'll censor it because they don't want you looking into it. Certain other events in worldly events and false flags, and just the concept of false flags. It's a concept that was used in naval time a long time ago. What they would do, that's why the term is false flag for your audience. They would raise a flag that was the same color or noting from a distance that they were a part of this country, right? And then they would get closer to go be with their buddies, their French buddies, have some baguettes and cigarettes, whatever they do. And then they would lower that flag and then they would start attacking on them because it was a false thing. Pirates used to do this, all that. Well, that's the thing. It led them into a false sense of security, attacked them. And then that was that. Now, the big model lately, and I forget who proposed this, is a problem reaction solution. Now, the thing about that is that that's how most false flags, again, if you subscribe to this model and you look down these rabbit holes as I have, then what that means is that they create a problem, an attack per se, and then there's a huge reaction by the public because we were told something. We were told it was that other ship over there that attacked our country when it was really our own country doing it to get us into a war. And you know, the military industrial complex and the perpetuation of wars is what it's all about. It's about money. I mean, Standard Oil, Rockefeller, he provided the oil that the Nazis needed for their planes. It was manufactured in the US and then he sold it to the Nazis and us. So they're funding both sides of it. Yeah. And this is historical fact. You can look this up. So if that's the case and that's what's going on, then everything in your reality, especially what your government or your officials tell you, needs to be questioned. And just look at it objectively, read between the lines, like that guy said. It really rung a bell with me. So on the ones that get to you emotionally and that trip you out and that can make you lose sleep and all of that, because there are a lot of things like that that people need to look into. I have gotten to a place lately, and we talked about this on the show I did with you, that, I mean, you can focus on that if you'd like, but I would encourage folks to go with a model that I've been using for a long time now, which is just to tend the garden you got. You can't do anything about that stuff. And it's not your responsibility to wake people up that don't want to be woken up. It's not you running around, to use a metaphor, unplugging people from the matrix. It's up to them to do that. And if they want to do that, they will. And if they don't, it's not your responsibility. It's a comforting place to be because then you don't have to have the anxiety wrapped up into it. And again, it's like that Gordon White that he said on Higher Side Chats, that your response to the crisis is part of the crisis. So people who lose their damn minds and go, "I got to wake everybody up," like I used to, well, you're part of the crisis. They factor in you, you know, you're a pawn in that game because they want you to be. The only way to get out of that is to focus your attention. And that's something you said on our show, which I, that has been ringing in my head since you said it. The way that you put it is, I love you, changed my life. You're now one of those read between the lines people for me, because you had the saying of what you, your attention is your currency, and what you focus on is what it is. And to the conspiracy element of it, you know, if they are running the world out there, they're toddlers playing with toys, and just let them go have their toys. And you focus your attention on what makes you happy. You go tend your own garden, because that's what will propagate in your life. That's the seeds that grow are the ones that you pay attention to. There's that old saying about the two wolves. Are you familiar with that story, where it's like a Native American tale?
Nope.
So one of them is named Fear and one of them is named Love. And then the little boy asks, well, which one grows? And the grandfather, let's say, says the one that you feed. And that's true. So if you feed fear, absolutely, you're going to get more fear. If you feed into the conspiratorial mind that we're all fucked and that everything's going to come crashing down on us at any moment, you're right. And you'll live that way. And you just attract, and it's all about manifestation and attraction.
Mm-hmm.
You bring back or reverberate the energies that you put out. And so if you want to feed your love wolf, that's all you see. Your world is now propagated with opportunities, love, expressions of who you really are, which then just begets more of that. And that's a great way to go. So I think on the conspiracy part of it, that's pretty much what I would have to say. But look into the moon landing. It's interesting. Look into Project Bluebeam. That's a fun one. Mandela Effect. I love that shit. Because Mandela Effect, that one is, you know, that we, if you follow the theory, that we, you know, all shifted into a parallel dimension. Have you heard the, to that end though, that we're all, that when CERN clicked on, because that's the thing. So CERN, when it clicked on, the Large Hadron Collider created a black hole. We all got sucked into it and our world disappeared. But instead of dying, we all shifted into a parallel dimension. That's why some people remember a dash between kit and kat, right? Even though it's not there, or that it's magic mirror on the wall, not mirror, mirror on the wall, whatever. So that's a fun one. But another one that I recently heard that came out of that was, is that we all actually died when that happened. And so we're all dead out here. And that one kind of blew my mind, if you really think about that. And all we're doing collectively is continuing to create a reality in which we expect, because we all died so quickly, so suddenly, all at once, that now we're just existing in this state of creation and kind of a no man's land of an afterlife. I thought that one was pretty fun, you know?
Which is kind of what I think a ghost is, really. So yeah. we're all ghosts, basically.
Yeah, that's how the theory goes. I mean, of course, there's no way to prove it, but it's still an interesting concept. And it'll kind of blow your mind. If you're just driving down the road listening to this right now, don't crash your car. You're probably not a ghost. It's going to be okay. But it's just a fun one to think about, you know? And this is what I choose to occupy my time with fun ones like that. But also, I've got a ranch. I get outside a lot. I tend my own garden. Literally, we have a garden, you know, and play with the animals and things like that. Turn the damn TV off. That is one of the big ones. Turn the fucking TV off, man. There's no truth on there anyway. Everything they're telling you is what they want you to know. And try it. Like, try it for a week. You know, if you got to wean yourself off of it, that's fine. Try it for a week. Pick up Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh instead. Pick up The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. Do that, you know, try that out.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like being out, basically, like, you know, for you to have a ranch and have a garden, like, that must be so extremely beneficial to your mental health and your sense of groundedness in reality. Because one of the things that came through to me around this time last year, when all this shit was really starting to go down and like pick up speed, was that, you know, this is all like a false matrix overlay anyways, all of the And you know, I have no desire to throw the technology baby out with the bathwater, because it's allowed me to connect with you right now, right? So I'm not an extremist either way, but where I feel like whenever last, and I felt like this for a long time, but I really noticed it last spring when I would go out for walks with my daughter and my partner and stuff, and I would look at the ground and look at the pattern that the plants were growing in. It was like rewiring my brain. And I was like, this is right. This is reality. This is reality. And we're just getting wooed away from it. And then when I started watching, I think somebody shared with me, my friend Rebecca shared with me Out of Shadows. And the part that really, really made it all make total sense to me was to see the like snippets of Katy Perry and Lady Gaga videos and things like that. And I was like, there's nothing organic in that whole, and in their shows, like in the venue, if you're in this like dome of this like surreal alternate reality that has nothing to do with plants or the earth, or like it's like this crazy programming that happens with our brains when we get really dialed into the artificial constructs that have, that we have co-created, but have been also like created for us.
Yeah. I've never noticed that actually. But as you're saying it, it makes complete sense. It's a very fake background. It's very, what am I trying to say? It's unauthentic. It's not real. It's not real reality. I mean, it could be a green screen and you don't know it, but I love that concept. Yeah. I didn't even think of that, but good call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So nature, everybody, more connection with nature is turning off the TV or the devices or the YouTube or whatever it is, and going and being outdoors and interacting with the world outdoors is, you know, it sounds, I think sometimes it can sound like overdone, overkilled pithy wisdom, but it's not pithy wisdom at all. It's really, really valuable.
Yeah. And get out there, dig in the dirt. That's how you get your immunity built up. Get your hands in some dirt. Go grounding, take your shoes off and go walk through the grass, not on concrete, you know, dirt or grass, do that.
Yeah.
It's incredibly beneficial. Yeah. And on a spiritual level, on a soul level, absolutely. It's a recharge.
Yeah. And so what's your take on, you know, like aliens or interdimensional, ultra-dimensional beings from different places in the simulation?
Okay. And so again, how much time you got? I did an episode on my old show where I really broke down all of the different concepts as far as what the possibilities are, because I believe that they are possibilities. We don't really have an answer. I do know something is going on. So to that end, once you realize something is going on, then you explore the possibilities, right? So the first one that you get to inevitably is that they're little green men or little gray men coming from other star systems in spaceships. They've traversed that distance and they come here to our backwoods planet and talk to us or whatever. From there, you're led to the Anunnaki and things like that, to where they are actually our creators. They're, you know, if you follow the Zachariah Sitchin stories, then they are our creators. They created us to mine gold here because they didn't want to do it themselves. So they found a monkey species here. They blended their DNA with it. They made us. Of course, they banged all of our women and stuff. And then they sent us out into the planet to be a workforce, which is why some people make the connection between why we're so willing to just work all the time and bitch about it, but we still do it, right? And why we're okay with this model of just work, you know, 8 hours a day, this rigid disconnection with nature and things like that, obedient, subservient kind of mentality for most of humans, right? I think there's always going to be that rebellious state in a lot of us, but they've thought of that too, conspiratorially, because then you have like TV, you have where they try to make you feel stupid for looking into alternate ideas or for questioning authority and things like that. And then a lot of people subscribe to that idea. But back to the aliens and stuff, they could be not from anywhere else at all. They could be the either interdimensional or interterrestrial with the hollow earth theory, which I love that idea. That one's a lot of fun. I mean, they could be interdimensional beings. There's so many things about our existence that we don't know, which the mysteries are of course what kind of keep you going and are fun to think about. But then if you think about dimensions, there was a book written in the 30s called Flatland, and it was basically, he took the two-dimensional right drawing, and then a sphere passing through would start as a dot and then, you know, expand to its apex and then descend back to a dot and disappear, because that's how that reality works. They couldn't perceive the concept of a three-dimensional reality from their two-dimensional or flatland state. So dimensions could work like that. Again, science isn't really looking into this. Some people are, like we have, again, Dr. Michael P. Masters looking into, my favorite theory about it is that they're UFOs that are, they're future humans coming back in time machines, because that one's the most fun to me. And it's the coolest one. You know, yeah, it's, all right, we can traverse the solar system. That's pretty cool, right? Okay, interdimensionals, but there's probably an understanding that they've got or something like that. This one ties in both of my favorite things, which is UFOs and freaking time travel, man. And what's cool is he calls them intertempestrials, because it's time, right? They're not extraterrestrials.
Right.
They come from here. They're intertempestrials coming back in identified flying objects, because we know what they are. They're time machines. And then, you know, if you look at that concept as a whole, of course they would fly, because you'd be able to traverse ground, you know, once you got to the time that you wanted to, easier, as well as if you had something fixed on the ground geologically over time, the earth changes, right? So they could shoot back into a mountain and not know it. So that's why you would want them to fly, theoretically.
Right.
It checks
right.
out. And then he, from an anthropological point of view, took the, if we evolve a certain way, that that's what we'll look like. Now, the other one is that there's no such thing as aliens at all. Now, I don't believe in this one necessarily, or I think this one is interesting, but the least fun, that they're all government craft, or they're all a secret space program, a breakaway civilization. With the airship sightings, like in the late 1800s, there was a really cool book written about it, about the Sonora Aero Club is what that refers to. And it's Charles A.A. Dalshow. You guys can Google him and his images and the drawings that he made. They're very cool. They're just old steampunk looking ships. But what they had was, is they had technology, and they were just human beings that were flying these things, and they would land. And this was before the Wright brothers took their first flight, but they would fly faster than a dirigible or a hot air balloon or whatever should. And they had all these cool lights and things like that before electricity was a thing. So there was an advanced civilization here, and maybe that's what they are. They shagged ass and they kind of come back every now and then to visit. The possibilities on those are a lot of fun. And that's why that episode that I did was just a breakdown on all of the different concepts and ideas of what they are. I don't know. I mean, I really don't. I don't have an idea about it. And the other point in where Jacques Vallée and eventually J. Allen Hynek of Project Bluebeam went with it was they're a psychosemantic type of a thing. It's a projection from the earth, that the earth is creating this, or we are collectively creating this illusion of these either creatures like Bigfoot or other cryptids or UFOs in general, that they're just an illusion. It's a psychosomatic thing. And we just don't understand that yet. You know, it's like a mimicry, like how nature mimics other things.
Right. That's super interesting. I didn't realize that aspect of Project Bluebeam. I haven't really looked into it, honestly. I just kind of like, you know, understood it as...
Did I say Bluebeam? I meant Blue Book with Helen.
Oh, okay. Blue Book. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bluebeam, I was like, I just thought it's where they project like aliens into the sky and we all panic, but they're not necessarily real, but that doesn't mean they're not real. They're just like fucking with us, basically.
Yes.
Okay. Project.
I may have misspoke because the government early on, the Air Force had a Project Sign, which turned into Project Grudge, which turned into Project Blue Book. And that J. Allen Hynek headed up Project Blue Book. And he investigated, he was sent out to demystify and explain UFOs. And so with that, though, at the end of his life, like in the 70s, he founded SUFOS. He was a staunch, no UFOs are nothing. They're swamp gas or a flock of geese, very explainable. But as the reports that he went out and investigated himself as part of this team found out later on that there's a shitload of stuff out there that you can't explain. And so then he founded SUFOS, which is a UFO organization. and it's kind of like the earlier MUFON. And so it's interesting to take a non-believer like that out to disprove a phenomena to then become a believer, and even to jump to the radical idea that they're all, it's psychosemantic. It's something that the earth or us collectively are creating. That's quite a jump. And all he had to do was spend a little time on it. He tended that garden, his attention was focused on that, and it led him into some interesting observations.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I would have to look into it to figure out like how it settles with me, only because I occasionally listen to the confessionals with Tony Merkel.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, some of the things that people describe, like they just don't have answers for it. They're not like, ooh, like sometimes they do, right? Sometimes they're like, I think my house was haunted when I was a kid. But a lot of the time they're like, I saw this thing. It seemed to be climbing vertically up nothing. Like, yep. You know, or like these things happen, these phenomena that we just can't explain. And I feel like, especially one that is so, I don't want to say universally recognized, because it's not, but commonly recognized, like Bigfoot or the Sam Squanch. I feel like rather than sort of, but again, I would have to look into this person's work to really understand what they are getting at, but rather than sort of like a what did you call it? Psychosemantic? Was that it?
Yeah. It's just projection of the mind.
Yeah. Rather than that, it feels like it must be something that exists sort of like independently, but maybe, I don't know where I land on it, but like maybe that it moves through different dimensions. Cause the way I feel about it is like the dimensions to me feel like very similar to the visible light spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And like with the understanding that, like, of course, the spectrum carries on infinitely in this direction. It's the limitations of our instruments that, you know, like give us these categories. And then there are categories beyond that or frequency ranges that we can't detect. But that's what the dimensions sort of feel like. Like they're just like different wavelengths of vibration. And as we sort of like turn that dial and learn how to turn that dial, we can move through different, and I don't think most of us are anywhere near that. I don't feel like I am. I'm near enough to start picking up information from the Akashic field, but I don't feel like I could phase out of this reality. You know what I mean? But I wonder if there are creatures or there are beings that can, that it's not hard for them. They just, they know how to phase in and out and adjust the vibration of their, you know, assumed form to go between like the like physical expression and a more energetic expression.
Yep. And absolutely. And what you said was absolutely right. Now the instruments in this case are our five senses.
Yes.
So yeah, exactly. And then we have scientific experiments, of course, where we can detect other things because we've told them to do that because things are out there to detect. You know, there's hearing frequencies beyond our hearing range, right? We get like 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz, something like that. And then it just goes down over time. Now to the point of frequency resonation, I think, and the idea that I've kind of come to with all of this is like, well, why can we see them every now and then, but then they can just blink out of existence? Well, it may be, and this is something that psychedelics did for me, maybe there's a filter within our consciousness that it retards or skews the way that we see things outside, and it kind of focuses into that narrow band so that we can not only have this experience if we want to from this very, I'm gonna say, basic bitch level, or you can expand your mind a little bit and you can have glimpses of other things that are going on all around us in many ways. You can do this through meditation, through yoga, through exercise, through spending more time and connecting with nature. Psychedelics, of course, are kind of like a cheat code to really open the door and say, here it is, everybody, check this out. But it does feel like there's a lot of stuff going on out here, but it does also feel like we're not supposed to see that, because obviously we're able to, right? But it seems like that not everybody, or that you can only see it if you seek it out, right? It's like, it'll give you the basics, you know, like on your, like when you buy a new car, right? Okay, well, if you want power windows, it's a little bit extra. We'll give you the basic package. And then if you want a sunroof, you can add that later, or, you know, you can pay more for that to have that experience, right? It's just an addition or an accentuation to something that you're already participating in. And that may be what that is, but like you with the dimensions, I do think it's more of a radio frequency type deal to where it's all a vibration rate. And we just happen to be vibrating at this third dimensional reality where, you know, we can see in a limited spectrum, we can hear within a limited range. There's gravity here, you know, all that stuff. It's pretty rigid and solid from our appearance. But I think, though, that has to do with the filter in our consciousness. I think it's designed that way, but it's also designed to be opened and unlocked.
Yeah, I agree completely. I feel like that is the gift of psychedelics. And I say this as a person who, I really haven't experimented much with psychedelics, mainly because of mothering and working in the healthcare field and just really not feeling like I had the right conditions to do so. So for everybody listening, if psychedelics aren't speaking to you, don't feel limited by it. You don't have to take them, but they do offer a gift of that, like sort of a, I feel like what they do is adjust that sort of temporal processing and the other filters that we have, our ability to process information and expand it so that we can perceive other information.
Yeah.
But it's still filtering through our bank of our human psyche. So, you know, how we interpret it then is very subjective. But yeah, I think it just like adjusts that, or helps us to adjust it so that we can sort of open up to perceiving more, which is why it's so impactful for people when they experience it, why it really seems to be like a catalyzing experience for spiritual awakening for a lot of people. Like they try a psychedelic and they're like,
I can't experience
that. Now I have to try and understand it.
Yes, and I'll follow you on that PSA. Psychedelics are not for everybody. I think they can be within the certain mindset, but like you to your point of it just wasn't the right time. Like set and setting are crucial. They're very important. But also I would encourage folks to start with psilocybin mushrooms. Start with psilocybin cubensis. It's very common. You can go that route. That's a lot of fun. Also, you know, you don't need to jump in with a heroic dose, as Terrence McKenna would say. You just jump in with a points of a gram, you know, and people do microdose this stuff. Like you, it's helped with depression. It's helped with PTSD. You can go on those journeys, go into it with intent. If I may make a recommendation, go into it with intent and purpose. If you just want to get fucked up and see pretty colors, you can do that too. But what psychedelics do is that they break down walls, and those walls are your ego. And then that ego, whatever you've got, is going to come rushing in on the other side of that wall. So there's an element of handle some of your business, get your mind in the right state, and then embark on a journey like that, because it is just an expansion of reality. And yeah. One thing that's interesting about them is the data input. You can hear better. You hear more. It seemingly allows you to view things that are around us all the time that you can't see because of the filter. It's a key to unlock a door to a new world, and that's it, or to an accentuation on a world in which we're already existing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Set the setting.
And I was talking to somebody else earlier this week who wrote a little book on like how to prepare to use psychedelics, because he got introduced to them very naively when he was about 12. He was like one of those super smart kids that went to college, and the college students were like, hey, party, come hang out with us, and like, here, have some psychedelics. And so that clearly altered his path, but he seems to be in a great place. He's done great things with it. But he wrote this little book that I just got in the mail because he shared it with me generously about how to prepare. And I love that concept. And I feel like the same goes for even just like if you're not using psychedelics and you choose the route of just trying to learn how to fine tune your vibration and open up your psychic gifts in that sense, it's still kind of the same thing where like ultimately you have to tend to yourself and you have to tend to your psyche, because regardless of whether it comes through psychedelics or your own inborn psychic experiences, you have to filter it through your human psyche and, you know, all of your trauma and your baggage and your beliefs and stuff like that. And that really affects the way that it affects what we experience and what we make of it, I think. So yeah, absolutely. Like whether somebody chooses that route or a non-psychedelic route or both, mm-hmm. I feel like there can't be enough said for the seemingly boring, but not boring at all, really, really important work of, you know, kind of cleaning up our garbage first, cleaning up our internal environment so that we can make the most of the experience.
Yeah, because if you don't, it'll do it for you. It just all happens at once. And it's not a gradual process. You know, I'll actually recommend you a book as well. I interviewed a young lady named Kelly Hanner, and I'll send you a link to her Instagram on your messages there. But she is wonderful. She wrote a book called Safe Travels. And it's really cool. That's exactly what it is. It's very well written. She takes it from a perspective of an experiencer. And so she does a great job with it, but she also addresses things that we've just been talking about. So it is a wonderful read. It's a great little book. You can find it on her Instagram. Just go to Instagram, Kelly Hanner, Hanner. And she is fantastic.
Amazing.
I would highly plug and push that one as well.
Amazing. And something that I wanted to comment on, that because when you mentioned your recent conversation for your podcast, where he was talking about aliens potentially being like our future selves coming back, I actually got that. I wouldn't even call it a meditation. Like I was just kind of trying to stretch out my psoas muscles the other day before bed. And I just got this, I don't know, it was like a drop in of information that I am still, the jury's a little out for me. I haven't fully integrated it, but that the beings that we understand as grays are our future selves along this bifurcation path, the ones that choose the transhumanist timeline, and the, you know, the Pleiadians, Arcturians, all those beings that we associate with elevated consciousness are the future selves of those of us who have chosen the like organic ascension timeline, and that both of them are like kind of shepherding us along our chosen timelines. And again, the jury is a little bit out. I haven't fully processed that, but it's interesting that you just mentioned that somebody else had kind of had a similar thought, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, but it wasn't, it just came in randomly. It wasn't influenced by somebody else's thought. So
first, you're a pioneer in this, and I'd write that down because that's the first time I'm hearing about this, but it makes me think quite a bit. So it is interesting because yes, people do describe the grays as being very robot-like or non-emotional, very transhumanist. If they did go that path, fascinating observation. I love this. You've started me on a new thing here. So if they did take that path, then the reports check out. Also, another part to that is sometimes they're seen with human entities, right? There's humans and grays working together. There's like a join up or like a team up between the two. And then to the humanistic part of it, maybe they're not. The reason that Dr. Michael P. Masters has his theory the way that he does, because he's an anthropologist. So he can look at past hominids, look how their face and cranial shape change, how we became bipedal, what that did to us physiologically. He looks at the skull a lot, and he breaks all this down in his book, guys. It's fantastic. It's Identified Flying Objects, Dr. Michael P. Masters. Then he follows that line logically down in future of exponentiality. And then he says, oh, well, this is probably what we'll look like. One of the observations made in his book that I loved was, is out of the millions of species on this planet, only one has been bipedal, and it's been us. And it's actually not that great. There are a lot of perils in being bipedal. You have a bunch of issues with us physiologically which is another reason people say we didn't come here. There's a prison planet, but that's a whole other thing, Amy. We don't have time to unpack that. But I will say, though, to your point, is that what the theory means to me as a whole is we made it, right? It's kind of comforting to know that we didn't destroy ourselves, or not all of us, and that some of us carry on and we make it as a species, right? I mean, that's nice. That's one thing you could take away from it. But then also that if they are very, very human-like, and to Dr. Michael P. Masters' observation that it would be a long time before we look like that, maybe we don't take that long to invent time travel and we still look very much like us. And then therefore they're able to come back pretty recently. And, you know, What I was talking to him about, if you think about like the Pleiadians, like you said, and how they could walk around us and not be pointed out as aliens, like, oh, that's an alien right there. But like the Greys obviously would, then maybe they're not from another star system at all. If I was a time traveler and I didn't want people knowing that I'd invented a time machine 80,000 years in the future, and that time travel was possible, then I would tell people that I was from a star system, right? I would just say, oh, we're from that cluster of stars over there. They can't get there anyways, dumb monkeys. And so, you know what I mean? And then yeah. They certainly can't create time and travel yet. It's a cool idea, and I love that. Now, your take on it, that's awesome. I'm going to really have to give that some contemplation. What is a Soyuz muscle? Or what did you say?
SOAS muscle?
SOAS.
Yeah, it's like the place where your hips connect with your trunk.
Okay.
Like around, kind of around where like your waist, like just above your glutes to your waist. So I was trying to stretch that out. And then all of a sudden, like, boom.
Interesting.
I was like, well, food for thought right before bed. All right.
So cool. Yeah. I love that idea. I actually can't wait to talk to him about that. He's got a new book he's writing. He's going to come back on later on, but that's cool. What a cool. Yeah. And then even if they are coming back to influence us, then you have like this, like you said, bifurcation, because what if the grays are influencing the negative parts, or the parts that don't serve us, to lead us inevitably into that, which is where we, you know, the transhumanism thing for people listening that don't know that is just where you're integrated with technology. You're very cold. They basically put, you know, Elon Musk is successful and they could put implants in you, and everything's very rigid and cold and unemotional. And you're not an independent thinker or free thought. All of that's very regulated. It's very mechanical in nature. And then, yeah, to the human part of it, and then they're influencing and people like me and you. That's cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was kind of a cool thought. And I kind of put it to rest because I literally got it right before bed. And I kind of put it to rest, and it just sort of brought it back to my mind. So now I'm going to have to contemplate it in my free time. Another cool thing
that's awesome.
Another cool thing that I experienced the other day was my first encounter with a reptilian through an Akashic reading. So the jury had been out for me about whether those are real or not as well. And now I'm like, yep. I mean, from my perspective and experience now, like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They're real things. They're real beings.
You got to tell me about that. Okay. So what happened? What'd he say? Is he just like, I'm from inner earth, or did you get any juice?
No, it seemed like it was really from a different part of, it feels like an invasion. It's really hard to describe, because I think like the part where the jury's out for me is where we like turn it into very human narration. So, but it did feel like originally they come from, like, they're really ancient. It was interacting with the person who I was doing the reading for, had a really ancient starseed lineage from Sirius. So most of this person's incarnation experience had been received in the whatever it is that we would associate with the Sirian star system.
Cool.
And it had this almost like it was like a stalker. This person had a stalker that was reptilian, that had been, you know, it had like a nemesis that it had had many encounters with through many, 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 I don't know, like hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years as to our concept of time. And, but I said, it's not, the strange thing is it doesn't feel like it wants to destroy you. It wants to possess you, but in that way that a stalker is so obsessed with their, like they're so fixated and fascinated by their, you know,
captive. Yeah.
Yeah. That they want to like get as close as possible. And when I followed that thread, it was that this reptilian being really wanted to evolve in the direction closer to source, closer to unity again, but had no concept, was so distant from that experience that it had no concept of how to do it, but it was really fixated on this other soul as an example of that, and could, like, you know, just couldn't seem to like regulate how to like set up an appropriate relationship of guidance or something. Yeah. It was absolutely fascinating, but it was this reptilian face and being that kept coming into my inner field of view, where I was like, this is going to sound like crazy and stupid and cliche, but, and this was my first time ever encountering one. So I've encountered a good handful of demons through other people's readings, but this was a different thing entirely. So I now I believe.
Wow. Okay. And like you said, it's something ancient. There's speculation, of course, because we won't ever know, but that reptilians are actually dinosaurs that evolved into the things that they are, right? So they're actually from here a long, long, long time ago, and then went into inner earth, and that's where they come from. Or it's just a fun thought experiment, but that's fascinating, because I have heard of people who can see auras and entities and things visually above people. And you'll have that, I want to say it was John Keel, I can't remember. Anyway, they'll have like this being that's gigantic over them, like 8 feet, 7 feet tall, and they have their hands in their shoulders guiding them, kind of walking them, but ethereally, of course. And then they have a reptilian face. It's interesting. It's almost, it's like a shitty backpack. That sucks.
Yeah, right.
It's like a really toxic like boyfriend. You keep calling to come back, like Mercury retrograde, but you do it throughout lifetimes. You know, it's like, he's no good for me. I can change him, you know.
Yeah, right.
You don't know him like I do. I can change him. It's a reptilian, dude. He's latched onto you. He's horrible. Just get out of there. I love him. All right.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But he's got a soft inside, I swear.
Look at that.
But for everybody's peace of mind, the great thing was that the guide, like the guidance through the Akashic records on how to like shake this stalker came through, like how to help and assist this soul to move in the direction that they wanted to move without it being this person's responsibility. So just so you all know, like, it's not like, oh, terrible, you have a stalker forever now, and that's the end of the story. It had some guidance and resolution attached to it.
I was going to ask, but I knew you'd say it. So there you go. Okay, cool.
Well, Brandon, this was an amazing conversation. I feel like you're going to have to frequent this show, because I want to talk to you about manifestation. There was some other thing that you were like, but that's a whole other topic. What was it? Doesn't matter. I'll listen back. It'll come back down.
Let me give you a quick one on manifestation real quick, because I've been playing with this lately, is to the point of a vision board, you know, because vision boards are very important. What I found lately is there was a song overlaid over something that I'm choosing for myself. What I did was I put that song on my Spotify. So when I'm not around, or I'm out at real job, or I'm out doing something else, I listen to that song. It makes me think of that thing. And it's another way of visualization, or keeping it in your space. And we can talk about that more. I just wanted to bring that one up for the tip. Play a song over what you like and you're staring at, and then download that song or have it on your phone, to where when you're not around your vision board, around what you want, you can kind of get into that mode every now and then and keep reminding yourself of what you're working towards.
Exactly. Because it is about that diligent sort of focus, but it doesn't have to feel like hard work focus. It's just bringing your attention back to that. And it's also so much about the feelings rather than just a cold goal list. Like, I know that translates well for some people. For me, it doesn't. For me, it's like really the feeling, and songs they bring out that like kind of emotional feeling, vibration, association for us. So yeah, coding yourself with a song as a sort of like an easy switch reminder to bring you back into coherence with your manifestation. That's a brilliant hack.
And it could be anything you want. It doesn't even have to do with the vision. It could be La Bamba, you know, it could be yeah. You know, big booty girls, whatever, you know, just whatever song, and then associate it and then download it and have it. And then later on, we need to, next time I'm on, we'll talk about how putting your phone on shuffle mode and then listening to what your ancestors have to tell you in the songs that pop up next randomly.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited for our next conversation already.
Me too. This is so much fun. You're great.
Well, thank you so much for your time today and sharing with us. And just, yeah, I'm sure everybody's going to love this conversation very, very much. I know I did. Is there anywhere that you want to direct the listeners to? I already have your social media and, you know, the link to Expanding Reality in the show notes, but is there anything else you'd like to direct them to?
Yeah, you just Expanding Reality podcast. It's just type in Expanding Reality on any platform. There's like 14 or 15 different ones that we're out on. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you've already got those covered. I have a Patreon. Actually, I just started that. So you can actually go to patreon.com, type in Expanding Reality. If after you listen to the show, you find it valuable, you want to contribute, that would be great. It would be a huge help. But also the YouTube. And that's where you can find this beautiful Amy Belair and I's conversation. And you can see us in beautiful Technicolor. And you can see the... Yeah, that does look like a dojo. When is your fight with Morpheus? Is it scheduled for a little later on? Or?
I still need to download the Kung Fu stuff first.
Beautiful. That's how you can find me, guys. I'm not hard to find, but Expanding Reality, that's how you do it. And thank you so much, Amy. This has been a blast.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for your beautiful attention. You know how much I love you because I say it every single episode. I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. I appreciate that you chose to spend an hour-ish of your life with us involved in this conversation. And without your listenership, this would just be a regular conversation between friends. And your participation, this has become truly a consciousness expanding effect that will, you know, domino through the collective. So I appreciate you all so much. I hope you have a beautiful day or night wherever you are, and I'll catch you on the next episode, everyone. Bye. Thank you so much for being here with me on this episode. I appreciate you more than my words could ever say. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe, and share, and I will catch you on the next episode.